Everybody, happy Monday night. Today is August 14th, 2023. This is Across the Pitch. I am one of your hosts, Mike Barrera. And as always, to my side, I have my buddy, my A1 day one, as they say, Dave GFC Miller on Twitter. That's Dave Miller. Yep. And then, of course, today we're not joined by Jose, but we do have a special guest returning for her second appearance. We have Alex Windley from the Heron Outlet. So, Alex, I'll go to the guest first. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, guys. I'm doing well. I'm excited to talk about tomorrow's match and then to get into it.
Absolutely. Dave, how are you doing today? Gillingham, man, off to a great start this season. So I want to hear how you're doing out in England.
I mean, obviously, two wins out of two in the league, went to the second round of the League Cup. I mean, before the big game tomorrow night, there was a big game for us. We'll wait at Sutton. Hopefully, you'll be tuning in, Mike. If not, listen to the radio coverage.
That's right.
So I'll be pretty much finishing up there and trying to get back the time for kickoff, which is... I'm sure we'll discuss it, but I mean, it's a bit of a ball. Like, isn't it 7 p.m.? Weird.
7 p.m.
Weird,
yeah.
Town, like, especially considering most games have been like 8 p.m. US time. So it's a bit of a frustrating thing, but we'll dive into that later in the show.
Exactly. And Valerie, one of our faithful followers, says, welcome back, Alex. I know she watched the first episode with you, Alex. So we're all excited to get you back in the conversation. I know, as we just talked about pre-studio, pre-show, it's been kind of crazy down there. So I would love to just start from the beginning here. Messi arrives in Miami. How has the last month and a half been for you before League's Cup even started?
Yeah, it's been insane, intense, breakneck speed. Everything got went super quickly from Messi's announcement, which the club was caught off guard with. You know, I know speaking to some people in and around the team, they were not prepared for Messi to make a decision at that time. So as soon as he made that decision, they needed to get everything in place, which they did have a plan, you know, regarding security and expanding the stadium and whatnot. But from a writer's perspective, it's just been nonstop, content interviews, you know, tactical breakdowns, you know, just every little thing has been magnified times 1,000, and it's been tiring but super rewarding at the same time, and it's been one of the more challenging parts of my writing career so far, but I'm enjoying it. You know, it's Messi and Busquets and Alba. Like, what are the chances that this happens again ever, especially with, you know, the Saudi Pro League and them snapping up every superstar now? Like, you know, what are the chances MLS will get another a star as big as Messi? Probably never. So I'm just enjoying the ride, but yeah, it's been tiring, but super cool. And hopefully, you know, tomorrow will be another chapter of that, this ride.
Yeah. I saw on Twitter just like about a half an hour ago, we had a reporter from the Saudi League giving like a player a watch or something along those lines. We had Ronaldo obviously doing big things this past weekend. So they're obviously getting a lot of attention. The money being thrown around there is just astronomical. I can't even imagine that kind of weekly paycheck. I know as you said, there's a lot going on, a lot to digest. What has been something for you as a reporter or even as a fan too, that has been like the biggest hurdle or the biggest shock, something you just didn't expect to be the case with that kind of atmosphere?
The amount of people putting in credentials, which sounds super, you know, kind of selfish, but especially that first game against Cruz Azul, a lot of my colleagues had difficulties getting into the game actually, because all these international and foreign media folks wanted to come in for their first time ever at Drive Pink Stadium and take up the spots that are normally the local reporters usually take those spots. But during that Leagues Cup game, there were over 200 credentialed media members, and they had to dwindle that down to significantly less than that. So that's a difficult part. That's one of the more difficult parts during this entire time, is just the access that you used to have, you know, at the training ground. You know, I'd be able to, you know, go up to players, say hi to them, you know, build a repertoire. But now, obviously, all that's blocked off, and there's gates everywhere. And, you know, still you get the post-game match comments from, players here and there. But I think access-wise, it's not as, as close as the players and plus the foreign media coming over, which is fine. But, you know, it's really unfortunate when you have the day ones who get kind of shut out and, not able to do their job. But, you know, the club has gotten better with that over the course of the League's Cup. So hopefully it just continues to get better in that regard.
Absolutely. So we got Jose join us. Sorry to miss you, Alex. Of course, Jose will try to make the third appearance from Alex down the road as well. And then Mike, thanks for joining us. And my buddy Kyle, kind words. I appreciate Kyle. Thanks for stopping. So Dave, I know it's a different market for you, international, of course. I mean, has there anything from your experience? I know you cover a soccer team as well over there. So have you ever had anything like this happen to you where it's this level of hype and media being rolling in?
I think not on the level of Messi, but I think we've had games before in the past. You know, we played Leicester in the FA Cup live on television earlier this year, about the beginning of this year. So again, you have all like the big British, you know, media companies there, you know, the radio companies in the press box, which you wouldn't typically get. In fact, we had it last Tuesday when we played Southampton. We had a lot of like the national media there because it was one of the bigger games in the first round of the League Cup, Carabao Cup. But I think the difference, as sort of Alex said there, I think it's a shame to sort of see. And I think the same happened to New York Red Bulls. You know, the sort of the media that have been there since the start, or that have, you know, have been there covering the team when they haven't been as good or haven't been as successful, sort of be shunted out the way to, you know, make way for the big guns, for the big guys that, you know, won't be there in, you know, the last couple of games of the regular season. If Miami are out of playoff contention, they won't care to be there for like the smaller games. Whereas people like Alex, who have been there week in and week out covering the team. I'm not sure how long you've been covering the team for, Alex, but I mean, you've been there for a long time. You'll still be there covering the team, which is, I think, is a shame, which I think over in England, especially with Gillingham, we do sort of treat the local press, you know, as priority. Even like with the big games, we make sure they get their specific seats. They all sit in for every game. They're always there. You know, we could be playing Manchester United and we have like people who contribute to our match day program. They'll always get their specific seats in the press box. You know, our local media will all get their seats, the usual seats. So, yeah, I think that perhaps is the difference between our level and perhaps, you know, having Lionel Messi, you know, getting every big international media organization. But I think there is perhaps a culture difference there between the two.
Well, that's the thing too. So, I mean, I look at it like NFL and MLS, and Alex, you cover MLS with myself and Dave, so you can understand the difference. NFL, you think ESPN's always going to be there, no matter what, right? You know, NBC, mm-hmm. They'll always be there. But for MLS, you know, the three of us push our the coverage to all the fans all the time, every single day, no matter what off season. ESPN doesn't care. I had CBS, you know, obviously CBS nationwide brand. They got the stadium wrong, the name wrong. They said PPL Park. I said, it's not PPL Park anymore. It used to be years ago, but today's point, yeah, they're going to come here for one game. They're going to enjoy the atmosphere. They're going to leave. And then the local content creators, these ones who've been here from the beginning, are going to be like, well, we're here still. We earned the right to be there, but of course not everybody can make it the cut. And that was what we were worried about today, Alex. We did not know what to expect at all. All of us applied for the League's Cup credentials. We were very fortunate that Jose and I both got credentialed to get in there, which we didn't think was going to be the case. I thought maybe one of us would make it, if maybe none of us would make it. But thankfully, a lot of the local content creators, like the Free Kick, I know Skylar Hoffman from Uni Nation, all these ones who've been there a long time got the credentials. And I feel like that's who should be there. You know, yes, I know Tom Bogert making the box is obviously very important, but at the same time, so are we. And in our own, selfishly saying that. So, do you think hopefully that things will turn better for the Miami media down there?
Yeah, I hope so. I know you mentioned on Tom Bogert and The Athletic, they've had a reporter there literally every single Miami home game, which is
right.
Cool. You know, the club getting coverage, but you know, at the same time, you want your local reporters and your local interns and your local content creators to be there because they know the heartbeat of the city and they've been there since day one. Like for me, you mentioned that, Dave, that you mentioned that I when I've been covering the team, it's been since the beginning, like that literally at 2019, I remember being there at the expansion draft when the team had literally no players. And now to see that, you know, Messi's here, it's been really cool to see, but at the same time, you don't want to lose your access, you know, and yeah, like I said earlier, the club has gotten better at that, but still, it was a bummer, that first League's Cup game, like you mentioned, Mike, that, like, yeah, a couple of my colleagues, they didn't get in, you know, because of the amount of media that applied for, and even I didn't get in, but luckily, I've been covering the team since the beginning, so the comms team was fortunate to let me in there. I don't know how I got in there, but they saved me a seat. So Yeah, I hope it wasn't too tough for you guys, because you know the local coverage is really what keeps MLS going and what's really needed in the American soccer landscape.
Well, yeah, especially now more than ever. You know, if anything, all eyes are finally focused. Like, for example, today I had a conversation with my coworkers. None of them watch soccer, but they're all like, so what time's the game on? What's this? They're all interested now in that thing, you know, like, can we tune in? How much are tickets? So I would have never had that conversation with them 2 years ago. They didn't care. They're like, oh, the Union, whatever. I'm going to watch the Eagles game or something. So, again, it's showing that the game is growing. But, of course, now as our job as reporters now to help expand it and keep growing. But now, Miami has been playing well recently. They've been now, I think, 3 or 4 League's Cups games, if I remember correctly, maybe 5 or 6. I've lost track at this point. So
yeah, me too.
I don't even know what day it is right now. It's been crazy. So I would love to hear from your perspective, what has Miami done well? What have they done better with the additions that they've made? Or what are certain things that they're maybe still working on that maybe Union can exploit tomorrow?
Yeah, well, I'll start with the exploitation there. I was talking to a couple of my colleagues. The Union, correct me if I'm wrong, the Union, for me anyway, they're a super energetic side that likes to go super direct and use the wide channels and just their speed and physicality over the top to just kind of, you know, bully opponents into the final third and then score at will. So I am afraid for Miami tomorrow that, you know, that midfield of Busquets and Benjamin Kramashki and Dixon Arroyo, plus the two center backs that aren't very quick, and Kamal Miller and Sergei Kristoff, with Alba pushing up and Yedlin pushing up, I do foresee the Union just taking advantage of that and yeah, just countering Miami, really. I know Tata Martino, they want to play a possession-based high-line style, and I definitely see the Union taking advantage of that and using their pace and younger roster to kind of overrun that Miami back line in midfield. But for what Miami does well, obviously Messi, you know, he's the heartbeat of the team now. Everything sort of kind of runs through him and Robert Taylor too, which has been a cool surprise. Everyone's now on the Robert Taylor train. He's always been a super good player for Miami, but now I'm glad to see him getting his roses. But yeah, through offensively, I think Miami will obviously run through Messi, Robert Taylor. They'll do Messi will free roam. I know Joseph Martinez will probably start up top and try to combine. And Miami are going to try to keep possession as much as they can, keep a high line, kind of make that field compact and try to pull the Union out of shape, and then, you know, obviously wait until Messi to do his magic or find a wide open teammate in Robert Taylor or Joseph or heck, even like a Ben Hakramaski. So I think it's going to be a super interesting clash of styles, really completely opposite. Honestly, Miami, they do counter a little bit, but I think Tata Martino really wants to, you know, play that high line and play possession football. So I'm really intrigued. And I'm excited to watch the match as a kind of as a neutral, obviously. But I think we're going to get really good soccer tomorrow. And I'm really, yeah, it's going to be the toughest team besides Dallas that Miami will face so far. And I'm probably going to get cooked. But I think I do foresee Miami maybe losing this game. Honestly, I think that back line and the midfield will just get stretched, you know, and. Yeah, I don't know. Let's see, but yeah, let's see.
Yeah, it's a lot. I know Valerie says Robert Taylor's been amazing to watch, and I think one of the biggest stories we've seen out of this whole Miami, you know, I guess change of their direction has been Robert Taylor. So you've seen him obviously longer than most of us have. What is it? What is the key difference you see from him? Is it just simply playing with a different caliber of players, or is it just a different approach to his game now?
I do think that, under Phil Neville, I think, yeah, Robert Taylor, he was, yeah, you know, like, Phil Neville's a super nice guy. I've talked to him, countless times, but, you know, tactically, he just wasn't up for it, but he's a super nice guy and all that, but under Phil Neville, Robert Taylor wasn't getting a lot of playing time, and if he was, he was being played out of position, really, like, as a kind of as a right back, right wing back, kind of, sort of in midfield, and he didn't really nail down a starting position. But now under Martino, he's got that left wing spot locked down, and you're seeing him flourish a little bit more. You know, some of his best Inter Miami goals have come when he's played on the wing, and now Martino has figured that out pretty easily, and now Robert Taylor is showing the quality that Chris Henderson and the coaching staff wanted him to show when they picked him up initially in early 2022. So yeah. I think it's that plus the combination of playing with Messi and Busquets, and obviously playing with those players, it sucks in defenders to the two of them. So they obviously have to be man marked And that leaves other players like a Robert Taylor or a Leo Campana or Joseph Martinez wide open, and therefore they have the tendency to score when they're not being marked. So it's been beneficial for Taylor to kind of have that space and can flourish like the player that I know that he's really good as.
Well, I mean, Dave, I'll shoot to you too, because I'm just focusing on Robert Taylor, because I do think he's really important for tomorrow's match. A lot of people right now are kind of on the fence. Nathan Harriel or Olivier Mbiza on that right side, because they'll be the one mostly responsible for helping out with Glesson's Nelly with Taylor's movement. Well, who do you trust right now more than the other person between Harriel and Olivier? Because I can argue both. I really can.
I think that's the issue. I think the fact that they've both been so inconsistent defensively this year, I think there was that run of like two or three games where I think Nate Harriel either scored an own goal or had a massive goal, like a mistake that led to a goal. But I think it depends on the formation we play. So I know, obviously, with that Carranza, it may force the Union to perhaps change their shape, even like perhaps go to a back four to try and perhaps pack the midfield up a bit more, and maybe it's a diamond, maybe a 4-2-3-1 if Jim wants to reward Joaquin Torres for his very, very good performance when he came off the bench. He changed the game on Friday night.
Fair enough.
But I don't know. I think defensively, if you're going to go for a four, I would go Nate Harriel, because I think he's probably a bit more defensively solid. But I think if you're going to start with the back five, probably in Mbiza, because you do need that, especially you know, with how important the width is for the Union. Mbiza is probably a bit more direct, better going forward than Harriel. So I think sorry to give a non-answer, but I think it's very much shape dependent. If it's a back four, I'd say Harriel, so back five, I'd say Mbiza.
No, I agree. I'll give you a follow-up to that as well. So Valerie asked real quick, and just to give our listeners who haven't checked it some updates. So Gazdag is going to be fully ready to go, but Doyle will come off the bench at some point if he does come off the bench. But Carranza has a grade one hamstring. It says that he's most likely not going to play, maybe. It depends on really how he feels probably the day of. Jim has alluded to him wanting to participate. Now, whether he wants to participate and whether he does or not are two obviously different things. So we'll see how the hamstring holds up. I mean, if we can get Julian late for 15 minutes, if we really need a goal, I'll take that every single day of the week. But, Dave, to your point about the formation, we obviously have been preaching for the three in the back for now months at this point. We finally have gotten it on a regular basis with Lowe, Elliott, and Glesson. Now, for those of you who follow Kevin Kincaid from Crossing Broad on Twitter, he mentioned exactly what you said, Dave, kind of making the midfield a bit more crowded, going to four in the back, and having Nathan or Olivier. Now, his formation that he had Olivier on the right-hand side, not Nathan. I do kind of agree with that because – to your point, Dave, we have seen Nathan fall asleep at times defensively. I can think of maybe two or three off the top of my head right now that he just fell asleep. And I worry that a young player like that might get a little starstruck out there playing against the likes of Messi and company. So I think maybe Olivier, he does have some World Cup roster experience. He just had that PK two matches ago. Hopefully some confidence building for him. I do think Olivier plays tomorrow. And I do think it's four in the back as well. So we'll see how that goes.
I'd be interested to see if perhaps, I know obviously we were annoyed. I think it was the Red Bulls game where Jim did throw that big curveball and it was like, we're stuck. Gazdag up front. We put Leon Flack and then flat three. I'd be interested to see if he tries to throw the other curveball. Maybe he tries to match Inter Miami. I know they like to play the 4-3-3 or like the 4-2-3-1 system. So I'd be interested to see if Jim perhaps tries to match them up man for man and goes with like a 4-2-3-1 to try and counteract that, which again perhaps allows you to have more width, which then especially with, you know, having Messi and you've got Alba as well, Alba's a very attacking fullback, and you know, Messi is Messi. Perhaps having more width out there to perhaps, you know, counteract, you know, the threat that man we have, not just like coming inside with Messi cutting in, but on the wings as well. As we mentioned, Robert Taylor is going to cause a threat out wide. Perhaps you just go with the 4-2-3-1, and you know, perhaps if it is two wide men of perhaps like Torres, and I think I saw someone suggest Jesus Bueno, or even just Quinn Sullivan's, just those two out wide, guys back in the middle who are up front, maybe just, you know, just throwing, even if it just, you know, it throws them off, even if it's just to perhaps give you more cover out wide. And to put less pressure on the fullbacks to not only get up the pitch, but to defend, you know, the threat of what they have out wide. If, you know, Messi wants to stay out wide on the right to be able to cut in on his left foot, you know, you've got not just the pressure on Wagner having to follow him, you've got your wing on the left as well that could try and counteract that.
Well, that's the thing, too, is we've seen from Curtin is that sometimes when he gets too creative and gets a little too cute, it always backfires. We saw that against Atlanta, right? When he had Nathan and Leon Flock on the left hand side, and it was just an abysmal match from begin to end. So, I mean, Alex, just to kind of be curious about the past couple games from Miami, we obviously saw them really come close against Dallas. You know, Orlando had them, I think it was a 2-1 match overall. I mean, who do you think gave them the biggest fits from begin to end in terms of just maybe who figured them out a little bit?
Oh, definitely Dallas. Yeah, that Dallas match was a big learning tool for the team. I hope that they took a lesson from that. Yeah, Dallas basically did what I described. Yeah, I hope so, because I feel that, you know, Tata can be a little stubborn sometimes in his tactics. I haven't seen it personally, but talking to Atlanta United writers and fans, you know, they were there during their success, you know, when Tata won MLS Cup. They were talking about how Tata can be a little stubborn with tactics. So, yeah, Dallas definitely gave them the most stick, really. You know, they figured them out really quickly. That front line that they had was super pacey and athletic and young and super technical, and they were very direct. And Miami's back line couldn't cope. And at one point they were down like 4-2, 4-1. And it's so crazy how they won that game on penalties. It's just, the messy effect. It was just a crazy game. But, like, yeah, I think I do think Philly, like you guys said, if they match up with Miami and they use that with the wings to kind of counter that, Alba pushes up. Robert Taylor usually stays out wide, but Messi tucks in. Yedlin pushes up, and then that usually leaves Busquets and the two center backs kind of really exposed. And if the Union play their cards right, they can counter all night long, and that's the one thing I've been pointing out to the supporters and colleagues. So, yeah, Dallas definitely showed the blueprint in how to beat Miami. You know, if it was a regular season game, I don't think Miami would push as hard to come back like they did if it was a, you know, they were in a tournament. So they want to win the trophy, so obviously they're going to push a little bit harder. But, I think Dallas definitely gave the Union a blueprint. And Jim Curtin's a super smart coach, and I think he'll be watching that game. Or has watched that game over and over just to see where they can expose that. And I fully expect the Union to take advantage of that. And you'll probably see me just frustratingly tweet tomorrow how I knew this is like obviously going to happen because Union are so good. But I think Dallas was definitely that game that gave people the blueprint.
I feel like just as Union fans, we're all the opposite. We're all just terrified. We're going to get blown up by Messi.
It's really?
Well, at least for me, I feel like I'm so paranoid about what's the worst thing that could happen to the Union that's probably going to happen. That's just kind of how our history has been. And we've always had these really unfortunate moments, or of course, Messi comes in and beats us. We had a home field advantage the entire League's Cup. And the only reason why we lose is because of freaking Messi walking in here, of all people, right? So it's one of those things where I think we're all holding our breath, especially because even from a free kick standpoint, Messi is just incredible. The things that he's been able to do offset.
That's a penalty for him.
Oh my God, the set pieces I've seen, it's remarkable. But I mean, in terms of goalkeeping, so we talked about this earlier in the season with goalkeeping. I believe you joined us for the second game of the season for us, but I believe Calendar already had a couple of matches under his belt. So I would love to know how you thought his development has been over the past season, any sort of things he's maybe still doing incorrectly from earlier on, or what has he gotten better at?
Yeah, he's gotten a lot better. You know, he's signed a long-term contract. He's gotten, he's one of, honestly, I don't want to sound biased, but he is one of the best keepers in MLS alongside guys like Andre Blake and Petrovic from New England as well. Like, Drake Calendar is up there, and he even got a national team call-up, I believe. That one tournament during the summer where they played Mexico that's escaping me right now. He got a call. Yes, not the Gold Cup, the one before that.
Oh, the Nations League. Nations League, yeah. Losing track at this point.
Yeah, oh my gosh, Nations League. Yes, he got a call-up to the Nations League for the U.S., and that's huge for him. And he's been such an integral part to, even when Miami pre-Messi, like, he saved so many games for Miami, even though they were horribly losing so bad and whatnot. But Drake saved a lot of just games for Miami during that time, and you know, to see him now get him that kind of recognition now, and now he's playing alongside Messi and playing behind, you know, a great defender like Jordi Alba, you know, I'm just super pleased to see how, you know, he's grown. And yeah, he's also a super nice guy. I've met him a couple of times, and yeah, Drake's just been super great for Miami. And I don't know if you guys noticed that during the transfer period for Miami, you know, I don't know if, you know, not a lot of goalkeepers were linked to the team because Drake was so good. There was no reason to really replace him in that regard. So, yeah, Callander, he's just been super great. And yeah, hopefully tomorrow he's definitely going to have his hands full with that Union attack.
Well, it's always hard to be compared to Andre Blake on the same soccer field, you know. But at the same time, Dave, if you recall from the first time we played against Miami, Andre Blake did not have the best outing because of, you know, two just outside the box goals. So any concerns for Andre from set pieces from outside the box or anything we should be worried about? Because he's been beat a couple times now from distance.
Yeah, I think probably less Andre Blake, more the team. So I remember before the Atlanta United game, Jim Curtin in his press conference said the biggest thing I've like reiterated to the team, and I will continue to reiterate before this game, is do not give away any free kicks out on the edge of the penalty area to Thiago Almada. What's the first thing Union do in the first 3 minutes? Give away a ridiculously stupid free kick, albeit the ball blocked the first attempt. Ball came straight back out to Almada, and he just stumps a half volley into the back of the net. It's like, just, I mean, again, Jim Curtin was at half at fault. He played the right back at left centre back and played a centre mid at left wing back.
Yep.
The defensive shape didn't work, and he should never gone out to that game with the lineup he actually put out. No. But yeah, they have to be careful. They can't go diving in. I think we'll probably get onto this a bit later, but I'm interested to see how players like Jose Martinez and Bueno and the two centre backs do, sort of how aggressive they are around the penalty area. I think, again, we'll get onto it in a little bit, but I'm interested to see not only how aggressive they are, but how it's viewed upon by the referee, if it's on a certain player. I think we could probably guess who that certain player is, but I'm interested to see how that will go. Especially with Jose Martinez.
Absolutely. Now, Valerie asked a question for you, Alex. Any issues on the Messi injury, or quote unquote injury, that we saw earlier today with the left foot? Anything comes from that or no?
No. Tata Martino was speaking with the media after that training, and he basically said it was a nothing thing. You know, I know he was walking around and kind of tweaked it a little, but, you know, Messi, he's old enough and has played long enough to know how his body feels. And if if he couldn't go, I think, you know, it would have been bigger news. But, yeah, he's fine, and he'll be ready for tomorrow.
Awesome. So now, I know, Dave, you alluded to the officiating. So, and some of the issues that people were worried about as well, the MLS is going to cater to the Messi and all those star players and the officiating. How do you feel the officiating has been so far? Has there been anything that's glaring in your mind?
Oh, sorry, me.
Either of you. Yeah.
I think we've seen, especially some of the Miami girls, like, people have just let Messi sort of wander past, like, waltz past them, essentially. Like, you know, they haven't, like, been people that's like they're either too afraid to stick a leg in or get in, like, you know, try and tackle me if they trip him up outside the box. Do you know what I mean? I think the other instance I saw was, I think Messi was on a yellow card, and I think it was the Orlando game. He was on the yellow card, and he sort of off the ball really lent his shoulder in and got away with it. And then Mambi then got a foul like about 5 seconds later. And obviously, on the yellow card, that was a very dangerous thing. So I don't know if there's been preferential treatment there. If there's I'm not going to, like, you know, try and say that. There's any conspiracy theories of Messi's being the league's, you know, fixing things a mess, right? But again, like, perhaps people are a bit cautious with either, you know, going in too rough on Messi, or, you know, sending him off in like his second game or whatever, third game, you know, how that would look in the product. Perhaps people are worried about that. But I think it's just, again, he's a superstar, but you need to treat him like a normal player. And I know a couple of players on the Union that will definitely do that. And I'm intrigued to see how, not only the perception will be of it, of how the officiating will be as well. And I have no doubts that Jose Martinez will leave in a couple of very, very tough, reckless challenges. And not only Messi, but Busquets. I think Breno might do as well. I'm looking forward to see how aggressive Breno could be in this game.
Absolutely. So, Alex, same question. What, any thoughts on the officiating or how players have maybe treated Messi so far?
From the Orlando game, like you guys mentioned, that got heated, honestly, the two double pivots of Wilder Cartagena and Cesar Araujo. They got under Messi's skin, and it was not funny to watch, but it was, you know, Messi took the rivalry very seriously, and it was interesting to see. So I think that's kind of the key. If you want to get under Inter Miami's skin, under Messi's skin, you not foul him too harsh, but you do need to play him a little bit tighter and try to play a little bit closer to him. And that's kind of the key, you know, against Dallas and Charlotte and all these Leagues Cup games. They never really marked him well. And obviously now you see, you know, you got to stay closely to Messi. And then, you know, he will score, but like try to closely mark him. I know people have been trying to figure that out for his entire career, but it's how do you stop Messi? Like, I don't know, but like, yeah, I think the Orlando blueprint was probably the best. Just kind of goad him into a yellow card and you know, try to get him a little bit upset. So I'm sure, like you said, the Union, like Gonzalo Higuain, I remember that Gonzalo's first game for Inter Miami, I think it was our second or third, it was against the Union away, I believe. And they just got under his skin, and I remember that so vividly because it was, yeah, Miami were bad that year, and Higuain just freaking out at Martinez was just, it was just really crazy and funny to watch in hindsight. But yeah, that's how you kind of get under Messi's skin, is just to goad him a little bit and force him into yellow. But you know, Messi's Messi, he's probably going to score, but you know, I guess that's one way of potentially stopping him.
Well, that's the thing. He's like, you think of somebody like Jordan, LeBron, you know, they're going to get their 20 points, 25 points a game. It's just a matter of limiting the damage to whatever you possibly can. And Jillian from the one team we agree on, I know, is on vacation with Kyle. They're saying hello from Canada. And yes, I'm wearing my Union concert shirt today. So Jillian, thank you for your recommendation from your show, because I love it. I love it so much. And then Valerie says, I loved how Martinez treated Higuain. And it's funny you mentioned that, Alex, because I still have the screenshot. I don't know if you guys can see it on camera very well because of my lighting, but I still have the screenshot of Jose Martinez's face when he went at him again. It probably won't come out as clear on camera as I would hope, but it's I have it saved on my phone because it was one of the most iconic Union moments where Jose Martinez was still kind of coming into his own. I mean, he kind of had the breakout game against LAFC when he had like the bloody lip. So Martinez is certainly known for that that type of the chippiness.
I was going to say,
go ahead, Dave.
Sorry, I was speaking to Martinez, you know, trying to get under Messi's skin. I'm really intrigued to see. One, obviously, I presume, Alex, would you be watching on the Apple TV MLS season pass?
Yeah.
I'm really intrigued to see, one, you know, who the commentary team is, because I know, obviously, the big worry from the Union perspective was losing Danny Higginbottom because of the great work he did over the last couple of years covering the team. Obviously, we've got him back. I'm intrigued to see if they'll perhaps go with a different commentary team that they've presume has been following Messi throughout the tournament, you know, because it's certainly been interesting listening to some of the commentary teams and the way they have reacted to some of the goals. And I'm interested to see how, if it is a different commentary team, so I know if Jose Martinez was to put in a very reckless heavy challenge on Messi or even Busquets, I know Danny Higginbottom will probably start laughing or find it quite funny and, you know what I mean, like covering the team every week. But I'd be interested to see how like an outsider's commentary perspective, how an outside like commentary like would look at it from their perspective. Would they be a bit more like aggressive with that? And the same for the referees as well, like, because we haven't really seen anyone sort of, you know, in England, as I don't know about you guys, as a saying, let them know you're there, let them know you're there early. So like, you know, going hard in the first challenge, making sure the opposition, letting the opposition know you're up for it. I'm interested to see how the referee will treat if someone goes in rough and hard on Messi or Busquets and let them know they're early, like put them on the floor, you know, let them join in. I think obviously Martinez and Bueno are probably your two big candidates for that. Maybe Leon Flack if he starts the game, which is a possibility. I know it won't be the popular choice. I want to see the Union be physical and see the Union getting their faces, especially, and then I want to see how the officials will react to it, because I know so far, I don't know, I haven't been able to actually catch a Miami game, obviously, because it's clashed with Union games, or, you know, it's like I've been at work or whatever, but like I haven't seen many players really go in tough or messy. They haven't really, when he's been in his flow and his stride, sort of people have been happy to let him skip by them. You know what I mean? I can't see the Union doing that. Like, again, it's on like Kai Wagner down that left side. Kai's not going to be afraid to, you know, if he feels unjustly like punished or something, he's not afraid to speak his mind or to, you know, get a shovel to or lash out afterwards. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how the officials react to it. Because I know, of course, they will feel like they have a responsibility to protect the product of the league as well, which Messi is obviously now the face of and the main business, the focal point of the business, the business side of the MLS.
Of course, of course. And I think we're joined by Jose. Is that right? I think Jose just stopped into the studio. Hold on one second. Oh, wait, no, it's just, never mind. It's too, oh, I have two windows popping up. Okay, there you go. Sorry about that. No, so Alex, just curious in terms of the officiant or any player in particular, has any player in particular kind of bothered him the most or any sort of calls in particular you can think of that might have been on the edge there of being a little ticky-tack from the officials? Alex? I think we lost Alex. Hold on. We got technical difficulties. Hey, Alex, can you hear me? We're good?
Yes,
okay.
I can.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. I don't know if you heard the last question after Dave had just spoke, but essentially what any particular key moment from the officials so far that you thought stood out or you thought maybe they were kind of protecting them a little bit?
Honestly, I don't want to like a mob to come after me, but like I think that one shove I think against Orlando, I feel that was borderline on another yellow, but yeah. I think for the sake of competitiveness, like they kept Messi in the game. Obviously, you're not, you don't want to be known as the official that sent Messi off in a League's Cup game. So, I don't know. I don't want to say that refs are like soft on Messi, but like at the same time, you want to be fair. But Messi isn't really a player that gets a lot of like yellow cards for nefarious stuff anyway, so
yeah.
I think that one Orlando thing you could make the argument, but I think it was just for the sake of competitiveness. If it was a tougher referee, maybe they would have sent him off, but still I think the game tomorrow against the Union, I think it'll be a little bit chippy, but honestly it's gonna be a good football game regardless, and I'm just excited to cover it and see everyone's reactions, honestly. But I hope they don't coddle Messi too much, because I kind of want to see that passion from him,
Well, that's the thing. So we talked about this earlier in the season. There has been like a bit of a rivalry building between Miami and Philly. We had talked about how the last few games have been pretty chippy. I know you guys stole a game from us at home in Chester about 2 years ago. I know the Higuain brothers had a say in that as well. So you think about, we just haven't played you guys since the beginning of the season, so so much has changed. But I do think some fans forget that Miami and Philly have really gone at it recently. Like it has mm-hmm. been some pretty hostile games. So, and I know myself included, there have been some fans who don't like Miami the most now out of all these other teams besides maybe the Red Bull because of these recent matches that have been kind of going to play. But Dave, you might be able to remind me here. There was one game I think last season where Alejandro Bedoya had a really hard foul to start the game, and he got a yellow card almost right away. Do you remember what game that was? Because that's what I'm afraid of. I don't know if you can think of it. Remember, that's what I'm afraid of, is essentially Brujo goes in there, tries to send a message, and he gets a yellow card within the first 5 or 6 minutes, which, of course, nobody wants to see that. They don't want to see a game that's filled with yellow cards. We saw the game, I think it was against DC or the Red Bulls, Alex. It was just constant stops, constant fouls, constant.
Mm-hmm.
It just isn't a good product to watch. So that's one of our concerns as Union fans in particular, is that as great as our defensive players are, like Glesnes, Wagner, even Olivier at times, they do have a sense to like kind of let their emotions get the best of them a bit. And we saw, Bueno out in Colorado threw somebody to the ground after they went after Jacob Glesnes. So
after the Querétaro game as well, there's a lot of very, very heated after that. I think Damian Lowe was wanting to murder some players on the pitch. He was having to be physically dragged back to the locker room by Joe Blake.
Yeah. No, it has been very physical. I think Nathan Harriel got shoved to the ground, so everybody kind of just went bananas about what happened out there. It was a couple scuffles already that we've seen so far. But in terms of like the League's Cup, Alex, obviously this has been a product that we've never seen before. There have been a lot of pros and cons to it. I want to hear your perspective just from the League's Cup in general. What have you thought about the tournament as a whole? And what do you think are some things that we can improve moving forward? Because there are a lot of kind of one-sidedness with where these games are being played every single week.
Yeah, I would like to see more games in Mexico to make the tournament a little bit more even and I guess with more parity, I suppose. Yeah. I do think that having all the games in America, it feels like a, like, you know, the Gold Cup. You know, the Gold Cup is a great tournament, but every year it's in America. So, you know, one of these, you know, I would like to see games in Mexico or even other Caribbean countries. But with the Leagues Cup, I would like to see home and away from with MLS and Mexican teams. Imagine Inter Miami playing at, you know, Azteca, you know, with Messi and all those people coming in and packing the stadium. Imagine how, like, crazy that would be. I would love to see that. I will say I don't like how they paused MLS play for a month to do this. I understand it's a tournament, but still, I think I miss having MLS games and you know, seeing, you know, just MLS soccer, to be honest with you. But I don't know where else on the calendar they would play a tournament like this, but maybe they could have, you know, incrementally put it between, like, I don't know, just reschedule it. And so it's not just a month off of MLS games, because I know there are a couple of teams that got eliminated super early, like the Galaxy, who are now, they've been sitting around for a month not doing anything. So, like, you know, what are they playing? Closed door games, I think. And yeah, I just don't think that's good for any MLS team. So, that's what I like to see change, mainly some games in Mexico, and maybe reschedule it so it's not this giant chunk of, you know, nothing for teams that do get eliminated.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of travel. So they had talked about how Querétaro had been on the road before they got to Chester for about 18 days in a row. You know, Think about that. For a team from Mexico to be in another country for about 3 weeks and change, I mean, that's a long time. And it really isn't fair to them in terms of – because even think about it this way. If you go to play up in New England, which they end up pulling out the win, though, so I guess that's a bad example. But for a team from Mexico to play up there in New England on a turf field, you know, in a weird stadium, all that travel. I think they had been – where were they before, Dave? Chicago or something like that? Querétaro? They had been somewhere along the Midwest, so it's like going from Chester to there to up north, and then it's a lot on their bodies. It's a lot on them as a whole, and they just started their season not too long ago either. So they have now a whole, you know, campaign in front of them to recover from this and to kind of move forward. But in terms of, I guess, you know, the MLS season ahead, now that Leagues Cup is almost over, Miami's obviously not that high in the standing. So what are some concerns you have coming out of Leagues Cup after playing so much soccer in a row? And maybe what are some things you're looking forward to with Miami's, you know, end of the season here?
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to Miami climbing the table. I know the rest of their schedule isn't as difficult as it was in the beginning of the season. So they will definitely be picking up points and pushing to get that last or eighth spot in the playoffs. I am a little bit worried because, you know, obviously Argentina will have, World Cup qualifying or some qualifiers where Messi will be gone for at least two games, maybe even one. And, Miami are going to have to play without him. And, and they're going to have to figure that out. But, you know, obviously they've brought in guys like Facundo Farias, Diego Gomez, and Tomas Aviles from very good South American sides, and, you know, maybe they will fill the void. Obviously, you have Robert Taylor. You have, you know, guys on the bench who will step up and will need to step up when Messi is gone. So I'm looking forward to seeing some sort of that rotation. But, yeah, I'm just ready for MLS to get started again and the league. And I just like watching MLS soccer. And, yeah, I'm intrigued to see if Miami can climb out of that Eastern Conference basement into the playoffs. So I don't know if they can do it with Messi there. You know, literally everything is possible. So, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, how Tata adjust and rotates his squad and how he brings in the younger players to kind of fit in with the Busquets, Alba, and Messi trio they've got going on.
Well, that's what Dave and I and Jose have always talked about with Gazlog. It's like, okay, well, you have this plan A, right? And Dave has kind of alluded to never being a plan B. What's a plan B behind Daniel and Julian and Ua? So in your opinion, what is the plan B behind Messi? So let's say, for example, he's not 100% tomorrow just by chance with his ankle. Or if, as you say, he's gone for World Cup qualifier, what is the next step? Because with 9 spots available for the playoffs, there is a chance that they can make the playoffs, which, of course, at that point, it's anybody's game. Then what's the option behind those great players?
Honestly, prayer. I don't know. I don't know.
That's a fair answer.
But in seriousness, I think guys like Facundo Farias, like I mentioned earlier, he's a 20-year-old winger from Argentina who can play on the wing, through the middle, even as a number 9. So he will get some games. Obviously, Robert Taylor, you have Even Ben Hakramaski, who's a young homegrown who has played on the wings at times, he's more of a central midfielder, but he can play on the wings. And Miami have a lot of depth in that regard. And I think that, you know, obviously there's injuries to guys like Corentin Jean and John Mata and Gregory, and they will be back. But, you know, you have guys like Nicola Stefanelli who can play on the wings. I mentioned, like I said, Robert Taylor, Fukuna Farias, Kramaski. And Miami will definitely have options. We even saw Diego Gomez have some time out at left wing as well in Miami's previous game against Charlotte. So I think Tata will stick with a messy type of player per se. I think he'll just still play that same system, but maybe put in like a central midfielder who has a good engine and who can just get up and down the field and play that while Messi is off with Argentina.
Awesome. Dave, how about you? I mean, in terms of the Union, we obviously are in a different position, but we still have a lot to play for moving forward with MLS play being now, what, a week and a half away, 2 weeks away. What are your concerns coming out of Leagues Cup? Because although we haven't had to deal with the travel that even Miami's had to deal with, it's certainly been a long stretch of non-league play. So what are you concerned about as we kind of enter this final week?
I think, obviously, for me, the main concern now is obviously tomorrow night, but looking beyond that, I think the biggest thing is just trying to make sure you get that top three sort of place guarantee your home playoff game this one. Trying to close the gap on Cincinnati. I said on the Todd Lewis' show last night and on his podcast, you know, it's so frustrating that the Union are 11 points off Cincinnati. The gap should be so much closer. And I think now it is between the end of the season is, for me, it's shoring up those mistakes, shoring up those lapses of confidence because this team has thrown away games, has thrown away points when they should be winning. I think, again, for me now, it's just cutting out those mistakes and taking advantage of the gaps and taking advantage of the little openings that the two teams above them actually offer them, as opposed to, you know, somewhat in a way, weirdly, like following suit with them. If Cincinnati lose, the Union will fail to win. If Cincinnati will win, typically the Union will win. Same with Nashville, although they have closed the gaps considerably with Nashville the last few weeks. But I think one question here for Alex is especially, I think obviously looking ahead for the rest of the season, as you mentioned, Messi will be away for a few games at least. Is there immense pressure to make the playoffs this year, or was it somewhat an all or nothing on next year? Looks like MLS year is leagues, MLS Cup or bust.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, especially now with the playoff situation, I think a lot of people will forgive Miami if they don't manage to make the playoffs this year. You know, the way they started the season, you know, Phil Neville in charge, and then you go through a regime change with Tata coming in, obviously the trio coming in, and all these new players coming in. So if they don't make the playoffs, I'm sure people will be a little bit more forgiving. But next season, 2024, I'll remind everyone that the sanctions will also be gone. So they'll have extra allocation money to continue to improve their roster. And they'll have a full year, a calendar year of Messi, Busquets, and Alba in 2024. So I think that's when they will be pushing for MLS Cup. Maybe US Open Cup if they don't get past Cincinnati away, which will be a very difficult match. And, you know, hopefully they'll be in the Champions Cup now? If they finish, I don't know. The Champions League, I don't know. But the CONCACAF Champions Cup, if they finish, I think it's third place or higher, I think, in the League's Cup. They'll get a spot in the Champions Cup. So I think that's the goal. This year, maybe not. But next year, obviously, I think, you know, finishing top of the East, MLS Cup, all that jazz, I think that'll be the goal for them in 2024 and 2025.
It's quite literally the, you know, from the bottom to the top in terms of expectations. I mean, well, we had talked earlier this season, but again, like I said, and we had both agreed top four, top five team. Of course, injuries played a big part of that. So it's not just only because of the players that were on the field, but, you know, you guys had high expectations entering this season to at least be a top four team. So it's unfortunate that kind of went, you know, downhill from there. But I know for the Union, we know we have Ty Baribo still in the works here with the paperwork still being done. For those who haven't heard yet, he's essentially has to go back to Europe to finish more paperwork to get settled down. Now, if you're Union fans, you know that paperwork and visa issues and immigration is always a problem. I don't know why. We always have the worst luck with any sort of immigration stuff. But Alex, I'm just curious from your perspective, have you guys had any issues at all with visas, immigration, paperwork, that kind of stuff? Or has it just been here, they're here and they're playing?
Honestly, I don't know if it's like a Miami thing, but they've always had good, I don't know, luck or good lawyers with the green card and visa situations down here. Even with, I believe when Julian Carranza was down here, he got his green card pretty quickly. Correct me if I'm wrong. And Matias Pellegrini as well, when they first came in, they were set pretty quickly. So I'll mention Facundo Farias and Tomas Aviles and Diego Gomez. They were able to be pretty integrated into the team very quickly. You know, even Farias is traveling traveled with Miami to Philadelphia to play tomorrow. So his paperwork came through really quickly. So I don't know. Maybe it has to do with the different state legislator or I don't know, but. Miami they've always been able to bring stuff like that in pretty quickly.
Yeah, it seems like it's a union thing, because I swear, honestly, I know people have hinted at the countries that the players are coming from has some sort of impact on it. So, for example, I don't know if you've heard, but Olivier Mbaizo is essentially requesting to be removed because his family can't get visas to come into the country to play. It's one of those things where why? Why is it such an issue that it's taken now a full season? I mean, Jim had mentioned that this wasn't like a brand new thing. They've known about this for quite some time, and it's just kind of been under the rug, obviously. So I wonder why it is us, out of all people. We think Ua had a delay. I think Corey Burke, Dave, had an issue.
Getting the green card. We had the yearly Sergio Santos issue. About 3 years. Sergio didn't play like the start of the year or like a part of the year, like three successive years because of green card or visa issues. Who was the other player? Jameer Montero had issues surrounding.
That's right.
I think family issues as well, which obviously perhaps led to him, moving. What's it called?
Moving I forget to San family. Jose. Yeah.
I think, perhaps that is Jose's year.
Yeah, and Valor jokes Florida likes immigrants more than Pennsylvania does. I guess so, Val, because it doesn't seem like it's reasonable at this point for us to be so having so many issues here. But again, we will hope to have Ty Brebo back by MLS play because Julian has been getting a lot of recognition overseas. According to Curtin, has been getting a lot of looks from overseas, but. I know you and I have been going back and forth about Julian's presence and stuff like that over the past season and a half. He has not, however, played, or he should not be playing tomorrow. So what have you thought about Julian's season so far? I know you're watching from afar, but what have you thought about Carranza? I know he maybe is exceeding expectations across the board, but I'm sure you're disappointed not to be able to see him tomorrow night.
Yeah, and I thought it would be a really cool narrative to see, one of the initial players that signed for Inter Miami playing against, a fellow Argentine and the best player in the world, right now, Lionel Messi. It would have been cool to see Julian be able to play against his ex-club and probably his idol too. So, it really sucks that, I hope he recovers well. And I don't know if that was, I'll tell this one story. I don't know if it was him, but when I was at the Messi unveil a couple of weeks ago, I could have sworn I saw him walking around. I don't know if that was him. I don't know if you guys knew if he like went to Miami for it, but I'm pretty sure it was him because he has a pretty recognizable face. But
yeah,
I don't know if it was him, but maybe I'm going crazy or I'm sleep deprived or whatever. I'm pretty sure it was him. But yeah, it would have been cool to see Carranza play, but. I truly hope he just recovers really well, and if he does play some part tomorrow, maybe 10 minutes at the end, if the Union need a goal, if they're up, or if they're up by like 5 because Miami's back line is so slow. I don't know, but let's see. So hopefully he's been playing out of his mind, and in some like alternate universe, maybe he could have stayed at Miami and played next to Messi. I don't know, but I just hope he recovers well.
Yeah, I know he loves Philly, but part of him probably thinks, damn, I was there. I could have been part of this madness going on. You seem to be pessimistic on Miami's chances tomorrow. I think us here are a little bit the opposite. Maybe we're just, negative as Philadelphia fans. So before we wrap up the show, again, thanks for having us. Let's give us some score predictions, and then we'll do your plugs to kind of close it out. So, Alex, I'll go to you first. What are your score predictions for tomorrow? And is Messi scoring a brace tomorrow? What is he doing?
Yeah, I think Messi will score. I think it'll be another, FC Dallas game for Miami. I think it's going to be, I don't know. I think it'll be another tight game. I think it'll go down to the wire. I think both teams will score multiple goals. I'll say like 4-4 in regulation, and then it'll probably go to penalties, I think.
Oh, gosh, don't say that.
Yeah, I think it'll be a high-scoring game. I really do.
Why even speak that to existence?
I just have a feeling.
I know, me too. No, we don't typically do well in PKs at all. We beat DC. We beat the Red Bulls. We were about, we were Chris Donovan away from going to penalties with Querétaro as well. So the penalty kicks are just terrifying, especially because as much as I love Andre Blake, just seeing the lineup you guys can put out there for penalty kicks, I'm like, oh, crap. Like, now we got Busquets. Mm-hmm. Now we got Messi. Now Jose Martinez is coming in, who's taking the PKs on a regular basis now. But, Dave, what are your thoughts? What are your – realist, don't be biased to the Union, man. Give me the real stuff here.
No, I was going to say, since that fight, since the end of the group stages, the Union have struggled not just to score goals but create chances, I said on air. Post podcast yesterday, the biggest issue is the Union getting players in the box. They've struggled to get players in the right areas or inside the penalty box. So the strikers, crushing the penalty area. And I think the biggest issue is the lack of width the team has when you place such an importance on your fullbacks being your prime, your prime outlet of width.
Yeah.
It forces your two strikers to have to go out wide to get the ball and create stuff, and then creates an isolation issue in the middle, because you've got one striker against two defenders, three defenders, and they just, when you do put the ball in the box, there's never enough players in there to get that contact. And I noticed it against the Red Bulls. It happened quite often against Querétaro on Friday night, and you didn't have struggled to create chances and score goals. That's my biggest concern, especially if with the way we've seen Miami just score for fun throughout the entirety of the Leagues Cup, especially with Messi. I'll go 2-1 to the Union. I think my only concern is that Jim perhaps deploys the same game plan he used on Friday, which is get the goal, get the game out of sight after 20 minutes and just sit off and back off and just try and limit them. Of course, it could end up being a ridiculously stupid idea against a team that, giving Messi so much of the possession and Busquets so much possession to try and orchestrate play. But I think 2-1. I'm hoping the Union could be brave, maybe go with a 4-2-3-1, get more players up, have some more width, get craftier players in the ball like Sullivan and even Torres. I know, of course, he hasn't lit the world on fire, but I think what he did against in a game where the Union dead to the rights against Querétaro, he brought some life into the game. I'm hoping that he can replicate that. Perhaps starting tomorrow night, so I'm hoping 2-1. Goal scorer wise, I'm going to go Gazdag and Jose Martinez. Why not? He's going to get a very, very early yellow card. He's going to get a ridiculous yellow card for a tough challenge. And I hope that's the one thing I'm looking forward to. I want the Union to set the tone early. I want Jose Martinez to clatter someone early if it's Messi, clatter someone early and just set the tempo, set the tone, and let them know who's there, and then put the referee in the pressure, and that will then probably decide the tone of the game. If the referee gets an early yellow card now, even if it isn't the toughest of fouls, then you know what sort of game you're getting into. And if it is, a quick clip of the heels and Messi, and he gets booked for it, then you sort of know that, he's going to be untouchable, and then you sort of know how to deal with it accordingly. But the Union need to score goals, and they need to quickly get over there. Attacking issues or offensive issues.
And that's the thing. If I'm going to give you some optimism tomorrow, Alex, or for any of the Miami fans listening, the Union have not played well recently. They really haven't. Mm-hmm. They struggled against DC United. Now, granted, they struggled against DC United earlier this season, too. They had a 0-0 draw at home. So it's not like this is new. They didn't do well against DC. The Red Bulls match, they came out with this really, really weird formation. Jim definitely overthought the lineup like he did against Atlanta. Kind of like he did against LA Galaxy as well. And the Red Bulls scored one almost right away. And then they almost scored a second one almost minutes later. So it could have been 2-0 Red Bull. And even if you think of Querétaro, to Dave's point, the goal that Bueno scored was not something spectacular. Jack McGlynn had a cross. It got bounced around. Actually, I think he took a shot and it got deflected into Bueno's foot and Bueno just scored the goal. So you've had three straight games where they've struggled to score and they really have not been impressive by any stretch of the imagination. And we also know that Bedoya is back. So do you worry that maybe he brings Bedoya in earlier than you expect or brings him in at all? Because Ali's coming off now, you know, 8 weeks without playing, whatever it's been. It's been a long stretch. So, again, there's some concerns from the Union fans that Curtin overthinks it. And in so 4-4, I would love for the Union to score four goals, Alex. I just don't think they have it in them right now. I really don't. I don't think they have it in them. But I'm praying that you're right, because I would like to see just least a good match. So I'm going to go – I still think they win. I think I'm going to go – I think I'm going to go 2-1 as well. I do think Messi scores, and I hope that's all he does is score one goal, maybe in like the 80th minute, and gives him a chance, and then that's it. Because honestly, like Dave said, you know, Curtin just said, all right, we're going to bring in Leon Flock on, and I think Donovan with a 1-0 lead against Querétaro, and we're just going to enjoy the win. And it's like, no, that can't happen against Leo Messi. They're going to destroy us if that's the case. So, again, I think I'll go 2-1 as well. But, again, Alex, thank you for joining me for a second time this season. It's been a pleasure, as always. I know we've been in touch over Twitter or X now, whatever you want to call it. keep on with our coverage. So, please, if you could take the stand right now, kind of plug your stuff away. Let us know where people can find you.
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at AAW_1998. I have to simplify my handle. It's getting a little too much. Maybe I'll change it later. But, yes, you can find me on Twitter or X at AAW_1998. I write for Bleacher Report, doing other MLS stuff and U.S. national team stuff too, and European football. But my main bread and butter right now is writing for the Heron outlet and giving y'all Inter Miami coverage. So you can find all my stuff there on Twitter or X.
Yeah, at X now. Absolutely. Okay, awesome. Well, like I said, tomorrow night, the Union hosts Leo Messi and company as they face off in the semifinal match for the Leagues Cup. The winner will, you know, advance to the final against Nashville or Monterrey. The Monterrey-LAFC match alone was just insanity, if you guys missed that as well. So hopefully a big night for the Union. And again, Messi's in town. So again, Alex, thank you for joining us. Dave, we'll talk tomorrow. Otherwise, happy Monday night, guys. Go Union.
Go Union.